Hello, this is Nikki Toyama-Sito. I'm the Executive Director of Christians for Social Action and your host for today's episode of 20 Minute Takes. Today, we talk with Eboo Patel, the founder and president of Interfaith America. And he talks to us about what a pluralistic nation needs from Christians. Join us for today's conversation. Eboo Patel, thank you so much for joining us today on 20 Minute Takes.
Nikki, I am thrilled to be with you.
You know, you and I are both Chicagoans. What is one of the things that to you feels like a quintessentially Chicago thing to do?
Watch The Bear.
Watch the TV show, The Bear.
Yes. I mean, there's 100 things to say, but I think that that show sums up the best of Chicago, the best of America, and the best of the human condition.
Yes.
It is about a group of people working without pretentiousness to improve their craft and to build an institution. And I think that is the most quintessentially, like, Chicago is an American city in the world, right? And I think that that is such a Chicago thing to do, to build something without pretentiousness that improves your craft.
Yes. I mean, it's an Italian beef sandwich. Doesn't get much better than that, right?
Totally. That's the other part of the Chicago thing.
Oh, so that's why I like that show so much. Well, I know one of the things that you're doing with Interfaith America is you're helping to create this category, helping people to understand the vibrant role that faith, that religion, that living faiths have. Can you tell us a bit about what it is that you see that living faiths bring to a vibrant community?
Sure. So I would say two things. One is faith helps me be a better person. Like in growing up around people who are from different religions, it just helped people be better. And one of the reasons I think it helps you be better is you realize that you are part of a story bigger than yourself and you have a responsibility to that story. It's not about you. Yeah. It's not about you. But actually, it not being about you gives you a part in a drama that is a cosmic drama. So that's, I think that's really powerful, you know? And I think the second thing is religion inspires people to build very concrete institutions, hospitals, schools, colleges, social service organizations. And those are that's the centerpiece of a community, right? Like, who built the YMCA, right? It was Christian groups. Who built DePaul University, Loyola University, Northwestern University, right? These are religious groups, and I think we should be deeply appreciative of that.
I love that, how the way that faith has inspired kind of the investment in something for a whole community. What is it, and I've heard you talk about this a bit, but, you know, like in the Christian faith, there's this idea of becoming all things to all people, and then ends for the sake of the gospel. But what is it that you think that a pluralistic nation needs from Christians?
That's a great question. I think it needs what Father Ted Hesburgh of Notre Dame called the lighthouse on the crossroads. So he called Notre Dame University, where my dad went to get his MBA. So, you know, my dad is an Ismaili Muslim immigrant at what I jokingly call the American Vatican. And I once asked Father Hesburgh, you know, why. Father Hesburgh was the president who really built the university over the course of four decades, built it from a regional school to a really institution of global importance. And he said, look, we are a crossroads where people from different identities meet, and we are a lighthouse that is proud of the wisdom of our particular tradition. So I think it's you Christians have built major institutions in this country, and you should be proud that people from a diversity of backgrounds gather in those institutions. YMCAs are a great example. And you should feel free that they are lit with the lamp of Christian wisdom, even if that lamp, but recognizing that that lamp is not meant in those civic institutions to be a lamp of conversion within those particular institutions, but a lamp of wisdom, a lamp of compassion, a lamp of guidance, a lamp of good cheer. You know, I think that that's really important. The good news, the good news that it is wonderful to be alive. You know, I grew up at YMCAs, and the kind of the Christian inflection in YMCA activities was an important enrichment in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and part of the reason for that is because the YMCA also respected my faith.
Ah,
right. And so I think that, and I don't think that, that's that hard to do, honestly. I think that we do it all the time in America. We do it in every hospital all the time, right? Like a Catholic hospital will say to a Muslim, do you need a chaplain of your faith to help you right now? That's a beautiful thing.
I appreciate that because I think sometimes Christians can feel like they need to scrub their Christian distinctives to show up. And what I hear you saying is, no, both make space for everybody to sort of shine their light, but also recognize what it is that from your tradition, it actually contributes.
Totally. I think that that's so important, right? Like to be proud of your identity and to say, this is what inspired me to do this. And I, what I say is, within every religion, there is some version of the Great Commission and the Great Cooperation, right? And yes, Islam is a religion that seeks to convert others. It is also a religion that seeks to cooperate with others. And at different times and in different places, a different ethic is necessary. So it's not the right thing to convert in a hospital setting, right? But it may well be the right thing in a different setting.
Oh, no, I appreciate that. I think one of the things that I have appreciated is in the gatherings that you pull together, and it might be mostly Christians from a Christian tradition, or also might be people across many faiths, that you make a very hospitable place for people to practice the distinctives of their faith, but also to be in company with each other. What are some of the ingredients that you feel like are necessary for that kind of diversity in a common space?
It's such a great question. So, you know, one of my favorite lines is by Dorothy Day, the founder of the Catholic Worker Movement. She says, our job is to create a space where it is easier for people to be good. And our version of that is our job is to create a space where it is easier for people to cooperate. Right. And I think, I think part of cooperating is it is you gather a diverse group of people and you know a little something about their identity that you admire. Right. And so to know a little bit, a little something about you that, that I admire, like that's, I think that that's powerful for folks, right? To make a connection. I think that that is a very powerful thing.
Oh, I can totally see that in your posture and how your team shows up, that kind of identifying what's that one thing that that community brings to the table.
Yeah. That's admirable.
And you're good about calling that out. I think the way I sometimes think about it is, I try to find one point of compassion with another person, something that I sort of relate to and also can empathize with them.
Yeah, and so it can be a friend in common. It could be like, you know, my mom went to one of the schools that your community built. It could be something that you've read in a text from that tradition. But I just think like to say, there's something about your tradition that I admire. So I'm from a small community of Islam called Ismaili Muslims. There's 15 million of us in the world, right? And it is always both a shock and a joy when somebody knows Ismailis and has something and has something positive to say. It's like a shock and a joy. And so I want to be that guy for other people.
Yeah, no, I love that. You've worked with a lot of different religious groups. Do you have any observations, particularly about folks from the Christian community, the hesitations or the blocks that they might have that might be particular to their kind of the way that they show up in the world, that you feel like, oh, actually, that seems to be a bit of a block for folks engaging in kind of interfaith work or partnership across different religious lines, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, I would say there's two things. One is I think that there is this concern for a certain set of Christians that interfaith work means giving up their faith. Right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And, you know, I understand that. And part of what I want to do is I want to be clear with the people who we engage with, like almost proactively, we are interested in the distinctiveness of your faith in a way that is appropriate for this setting. So the setting is not appropriate for conversion, but honestly, I'm not concerned you're going to do that, right? Like I'm not going to tell you not to convert here. I'm going to tell you, if you are a Christian from an evangelical background, I'm going to begin the conversation with the story of an evangelical Christian that I'm friends with, right? Mm-hmm. And we're going to make a point of connection there. And I'm going to like subtly let you know, I appreciate who you are and where you come from. And and honestly, like kind of like a potluck supper, 99 out of 100 times it goes well, right? 99 out of 100 times, people from proselytizing backgrounds, which is most religious traditions, right? Islam, Christianity, et cetera, they don't proselytize in an interfaith setting. 999 out of 1,000 times. So I don't know why people are worried about that, because it almost never happens, right? And I think the second thing, which I think is a genuine, it does happen, is because so many interfaith settings not only lean progressive, but they lean, you know, in a kind of like, there's kind of an oppositionalness to them, like an ex-evangelical kind of vibe across faiths, not just ex-van, right? There's almost, there can be kind of a calling out of more conservative traditions or more traditionalist traditions. We just, from the jump, we make sure that that is not going to happen. You know,
I see. That is not
who we are. That's not going to happen. So, and again, that's not that hard to do. It's not that hard to kind of signal we are a place that welcomes the distinctive identities of a range of people, and diversity is not just the differences you like. Like the point here is not that you're going to like every difference, but the point is kind of like a potluck supper. You want to encourage people to bring a dish that's distinctive to their identity, that is in positive combination with other dishes.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, building on that potluck dinner analogy, one of the things that I see you all doing is that you bring people to dialogue across different faith traditions, but it's not just for like a, oh, I got to know you and you got to know me better. But it seems that Interfaith America understands that there's a role that faith plays, that they're trying to kind of elevate that for folks who might sort of think about policies and sort of scrub it of this mysterious faith component. Christians for Social Action tries to work towards justice. Do you have any stories of ways that folks have worked effectively across different faith traditions to do something in that justice vein, in that for the common good, in a way that you think was sort of distinctive because they were sparked by this faith component?
Yeah. So I'll say a couple of one is, I mean, the quintessential example, especially for progressives, is the civil rights movement, right? So, and the famous image from Selma with a Catholic nun and Martin Luther King Jr. and Rabbi Heschel marching together. So that's kind of a standard reference point. But let me kind of trouble the waters a little bit here and say, we don't use the word justice very much at Interfaith America. And the reason for that is because different identities have different definitions of justice.
True.
And the obvious one is abortion, right? So an evangelical Christian or a more traditionalist Catholic might say the justice view in abortion is clear. It should be outlawed, right? There is a life at stake, the most vulnerable life. And a Reformed Jew or a secular humanist would say there's justice at stake. I'm pro-choice. What's at stake is a woman's freedom, right? And so we actually recognize that there's different definitions of justice. And and you, one might say, well, I have a clear view on that one, but not as much of a clear view on the Middle East, right? You're like, yeah, that's kind of muddy for me, you know?
Yes.
But the point is, there are clearly different definitions of justice out there. And those definitions of justice are clearly affected by people's identities.
Yes.
So if you want a diverse set of identities present, you should expect to have different definitions of justice.
Yes, yes.
Right? So we talk a lot about the civic at Interfaith America. And the civic are those areas of American and global life in which we come together to cooperate on concrete activities that we generally agree on. So a Little League is a great example of the civic. A hospital is a great example of the civic. A library is a great example of the civic. Disaster relief is a great example. Nobody disagrees on this, right? And I actually think faith-based institutions, they absolutely shine in the realm of the civic. So the largest social services organizations after the federal government are Catholic Charities and the Salvation Army. Wow, so some people kind of roll their eyes and say, well, those are, you know, that's charity. That's not justice. I'm like, yeah, imagine that those institutions didn't exist.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Like, let's not pretend that housing and feeding people is like for the simpletons. You know, the truth is that work is profound and it's hard and it's super important. So let's respect the people who do it. Right. Yeah. And the fact that it's non-controversial makes it that much more important.
Yeah. I love that picture of kind of the faith that is motivating folks into the civic area, this public sphere, which is a place that all of us are invited to join and participate in, and what it means to kind of be oriented to the common good in that, in our common life together.
That's exactly right. And by the way, I have my own views on justice matters. I'm involved in those in my kind of my own life. People know about them. It's not a secret, right? I'm kind of an Obama guy. But you can't have a diverse democracy has to center the civic. It has to center those areas of our common life that bring people from diverse identities and divergent ideologies together in cooperative activities that serve the common good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Because we cannot only have a public square where people are disagreeing on justice. You have to have a public square where people are cooperating. And here's a good example, right? Like, if you have kids, do they play in the pro-life or the pro-choice Little League, or do they just play Little League?
Well, don't ask me about the Japanese basketball leagues, because that's a real thing. But.
As you can imagine, Nikki, I'm like a fan of like, I'm a fan of both bonded social capital and bridged social capital. Uh-huh. I'm a fan of areas where people build their own community, whether it's ethnic or religious or a worldview or a view of justice. Like honestly, I'm happy we live in a country where there are both pro-life and pro-choice organizations.
Hmm.
Although I come down on one side of that, right? The public is a space where we can all build our institutions. The civic is that area where we cooperate on things that are super important and non-controversial. Yes. So one of the phrases that's frequently used is deeply held and widely shared.
Mm-hmm.
Is
mm-hmm.
this something deeply held and widely? So Little League is deeply held and widely shared.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A community needs a Little League.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate this because I think you're creating categories where folks have, I think to your point, it's not always entering the public space through this justice lens, but so much of our life is actually lived in all of these other places. That's kind of the community or social fabric. So I appreciate you spelling some of those out. I think that's really, really helpful. You know, there are some places where people, I'm going to say, are compelled by their faith into sort of direct conflict one with the other, right? This way, places where kind of religious faith and politics.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for those sort of situations?
Yeah. So I would say you have to disagree on some fundamental things and work together on other fundamental things.
Yeah.
Right. And think of it this way, right? So let's say you are to take the case of abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you are at a rally where you're kind of facing off against somebody on the other side of that debate. I don't know where you stand. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to ask you where you stand, but you're facing off against somebody on the other side of that debate.
Mm-hmm.
And that person's a firefighter.
Mm-hmm.
Or that person coaches your daughter's Little League team.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and the next day your house catches on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And when you call, that's the person that picks the phone up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you expect that person to not come put the fire out in your house because you were on different sides of the picket line? No, right?
Yeah.
And actually, part of what I want to highlight is that American life is organized so that we can disagree on some fundamental things and work together on others. And part of the danger of this moment of hyperpolarization is that there are calls people on every side saying, if you disagree on A, you can't work together on B through Z. And I think that that's terrible, right? And, you know, I'm more progressive. So people on my side, one of the lines is everything is political. I'm like, really? Everything? If your house is on fire and you call the fire department, you want him to say, what's your address? And by the way, who'd you vote for? Is everything political, or are maybe some things like civic, like the areas and where we work together?
Yes. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I am gleaning hope from you about these common areas that we do have.
Yeah, I'm a hopeful. So I appreciate this. Most areas are common, right? Like if you think about if you go through your day and if you were to kind of notch your interactions, Uber driver, barista, elementary school teacher, crossing guard, and you think about the number of areas in which you cooperate with people in which partisan politics should not figure. Crossing guard is a great example, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. That's true. Or, I mean, actually, the two places I kind of always get a little surprised by my life is in the jury duty room or in the DMV.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, I'm surprised at the people in my neighborhood who I don't know, but I also sort of appreciate that moment of showing up as a neighbor. So. Well, Eboo Patel, thank you so much for joining us on 20 Minute Takes.
Nikki, you are awesome. Thanks for having me. Take good care.
Take care.
Minute Takes is a production of Christians for Social Action. Our music was created by Andre Henry, and this episode was mixed and engineered by Willoza Media. If you liked this episode, spread the word by subscribing, reviewing, or sharing. I'm your host, Nikki Toyamasito. If you want to find out more about our work, visit the website at christiansforsocialaction.org.